My next guest is Jason Wank, founder and CEO of Altruist. They're a startup digital custodian that's hoping to completely disrupt the traditional custodian landscape. And Jason has a very interesting background. He's already started two highly successful investment firms, Retirement Wealth Advisors and Formula Folios. Along with that, he was named an Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year in 2018. And Jason is now on the line with me from Venice Beach, California. Jason, really excited to connect. Thank you for joining me.
Hey, thanks so much, Ben. Appreciate the great music to kick off your show.
I appreciate that. So look, you are building what's being called the first ever fully integrated brokerage platform for financial advisors. And I certainly want to get into all the details of that. I also want to talk about the current custodian landscape, because we obviously had some big news last week with Morgan Stanley and E-Trade. But let's start by taking a step back and discussing how you got to this point. So tell us a little bit about Retirement Wealth Advisors, Formula Folios, and then how you ultimately came to found Altruist.
Sure, happy to. I think, you know, the irony here is, you know, I started my first RIA firm in 2004, and I remember the first thing you typically do when you start an advisory firm is you reach out to a custodian, you know, a place to hold your client assets, do trades, things like that. And in that process, you know, 15 plus years ago, I remember talking to, you know, at the time the players were kind of the same as they are today. Names were slightly different. You know, TD Ameritrade was TD Waterhouse, but you know, you had Schwab and Fidelity. And in those early conversations, I remember you talking to the sales reps and then kind of saying, okay, well, you know, here's a link to our, you know, partner store or something to that effect. You know, and essentially, these are all the vendors that you'll need, you know, to launch a successful advisory firm. And I remember, like, my, you know, kind of digging in, and then my question back was like, well, why isn't this stuff included? You know, it seemed kind of odd to me that I had to have, you know, a separate package of software to handle trading, something else for fee billing, for performance reporting. I thought it was like the craziest thing ever that you couldn't get accurate performance reportings directly from the source. You had to go pay some third-party vendor to unpack all of the transactions and give you meaningful, you know, performance history for clients. So I think that, you know, those early conversations essentially shaped, you know, the formation of Altruist. Yeah, I went on to build a couple different multi-billion-dollar RAs, so I made the old technology work. But it was never easy, and the bigger the firms got, the more I realized that, and kind of longer time went by, that the methods weren't changing. You know, no one was taking anything and they were really digitizing it. Instead of things getting simpler, they're getting more complex. And really, the parties that lose in this were both advisors and their clients. So all the complexity and cost, you know, makes it harder for an advisor to run a business. And typically, it also means they have to continually raise their minimums. So, you know, we've seen financial advice, at least, you know, personalized financial advice become less accessible. So, you know, unless you have a lot of money or a lot of income or willing to pay a lot of money in fees, it's been almost more challenging to get access. So that's kind of the impetus, right? Was a long journey. I think finally in 2018, I thought, you know, if no one else is going to do this, there's so many conflicts of interest, so many reasons that we needed improvement that I decided to tackle it myself.
Okay, so with that as a background, explain exactly what Altruist does and sort of what you view as the overall primary value proposition here.
Sure, yeah, so like the most simple way to think of it is, you know, all of the key software that's needed to run an advisory firm is built directly into our custodial platform. So there's, you know, not much need to pay for expensive third-party software. And then even the custodial platform itself, we thought, you know, let's take a look at what we didn't like about the existing options and then really architect the solution to fix those issues. So it's interesting today, you know, most of the major independent RA custodians are offering commission-free trades. We were actually the first one to do it. And similarly, there's others talking about offering fractional shares, but of the major custodians, none of them are to market yet. We're already doing that. Digitally opening accounts might sound silly, but, you know, one of the biggest burdens for many advisors is how difficult it is to open accounts for clients and then fund the accounts, you know, transfer securities, Our platform makes all of those sort of nuanced administrative tasks incredibly simple and really fast. 500% more efficient than really any other custodial solution. So it makes it really easy for advisors to essentially do better work for clients and serve more people. The ultimate goal is to make financial advice better, cheaper, and more accessible.
And what does the fee structure currently look like?
Yeah, so the advisor pays a fee only after they exceed 100 accounts. So it's 100 free accounts for all RIA firms. Once they exceed 100 accounts, it's $1 per account per month. So you can imagine, right, some very basic math. If someone had 300 client accounts, it would cost the advisory firm $200 a month. There's no commissions, no revenue share. So a lot of the things, the little ways that a brokerage firm would make money or consumer make money, we still do make money in some of those areas, but it's a substantially lower amount. And then, again, by sort of packing the software services in, our software tends to be 90-95% cheaper than if someone bought that sort of standalone and merged it with their custodian.
Jason, if I just take a step back here, look, the space you're attempting to disrupt obviously has several very established players, dominant players. And it's not like those firms are standing still, right? As I mentioned earlier, we saw the news last week with Morgan Stanley looking to purchase E-Trade, who has an RIA custodian. We have the Schwab TD Ameritrade deal pending. And even beyond that, to your point, we've seen everyone go to commission-free trading. Fidelity did recently offer fractional shares trading. I think Schwab is expected to follow. How do you view the current competitive landscape and sort of your ability to make inroads here?
Yeah, I think so a lot of the services, right, even things like fractional shares, are still haven't made it to RIA firms yet. So they're early on the consumer side, so going directly to the end client. But but not so much offering these services to RIA firms. And we'll see what Morgan Stanley does with E-Trade. I mean, I think there's still a ton of questions about what did they do with that RIA custody unit. There was a lot of changes that were already set to happen because the RIA custody unit was technically an acquisition by E-Trade, a couple of years ago. And so there's a lot of, I think, that still needs to be done. And I think in terms of why Altruist and why now, I think the simple analogy is, it's difficult to swap out engines in a plane when it's mid-flight. These incumbents have very, very old technology. And even if their technology is only, let's say, 5 to 7 years old, that's still very difficult to be highly relevant today. The direction that most technology has gone is into a very cloud-native microservices architecture. Probably means nothing to most people as they hear it, but essentially it's much more flexible. It's very easy to sort of change out small parts of your platform, so you can always have a really modern experience. Most of the technology we see custodians using today is mainframe software, built anywhere from 25 to 50 years ago, and very minimally changed since then. They'll build some new sort of web-based services, but those services are essentially calling on, hardware that's not actually in the cloud, and in many cases not particularly flexible. So I think our biggest competitive advantage is the fact that we are new. I would hate to be, and I talked with a lot of the technology leaders at major custodians, and a lot of them envy the fact that we're able to build with today's resources versus having to retrofit something that's, multiple decades old.
Jason, when I think about the business models of brokerages and custodians, to me, one of the single biggest areas to watch is net interest, right? The money brokerages make off of cash sweeps. And just so everyone's on the same page, if you leave cash sitting in your investment accounts, let's say at Schwab, you basically get paid peanuts on that money. And then Schwab is investing or lending out that cash at a significantly higher yield and, of course, pocketing the difference. I guess first, how is Altruist handling cash sweeps?
Yeah, so there's two really big advantages we have on default cash sweeps. I think the first one is trading fractional shares. So, obviously with ETFs, one of the big differences between them and mutual funds, among a bunch of other differences, right, don't need to educate you, and probably a lot of your listeners already know this, but is that traditionally they sell in whole shares, just like individual equities. So depending on someone's account size, it's not uncommon if you're trying to build an all equity or all ETF portfolio to hold excess cash. With mutual funds, although they have a slew of issues in many cases, they can be bought with fractional shares. So in theory, you can hold virtually no cash in those accounts. So the whole idea with sort of net interest is less of an issue. We've just made everything fractional shares, and to the extent where, you know, a client could hold almost nothing in cash, and because we also have no transaction fees, even if they have cash flows, like monthly money coming in or monthly money going out, they never have to actually hold money in cash. So that's one of the huge advantages. The second is we'll offer a yield that's about five times higher than the default sweep. It still won't be amazing on day one, but we're working pretty hard actually on a sort of a secondary cash account, hoping to launch maybe Q3 or Q4. That should pay, like, in today's rates, you know, early 2020 rates, the equivalent of about 1.6%. So we expect to be much more competitive even day one, and then kind of build on that throughout the year. But I think one of the bigger takeaways is that, you know, if your objective is to be a long-term investor, you probably shouldn't be holding a lot of cash in your investment accounts. You should have your cash in cash accounts for different purposes. And we're trying to make that really, really easy and a lot more efficient.
Well, and one of the reasons I headed down this path is because I think one of the biggest stories last year with the major brokerages going to commission-free trading is that it really put the spotlight on the different ways brokerages and custodians are making money. And of course, some of these, I think a Schwab and Fidelity, they also offer funds, right? So you see zero fee funds out there, and the end investor is going, wait a minute, if my trades are free, my funds are free, how are these businesses making money? And then that obviously led to net interest and the yields on cash sweeps. I think if you look at somebody like Charles Schwab, what, 60% of their revenue, something like that, comes from net interest. How do you feel just about the overall transparency of these business models? Because you also have things like selling order flow, their securities lending. I'm assuming you may do some of those things as well. I mean, do you see those as issues where you have customers maybe getting something that looks like a low cost or free service, but they're paying for it on the back end and may not fully understand that?
Yeah, so I think the transparency discussion is way overdue. You know, we were probably one of the first people to write about it. I remember when I was trying to, you know, sort of stand on my soapbox and tell this story years ago, and people were kind of like, you know, turning the other way. They didn't want to hear the message. But I, you know, my common, you know, comments would be, look, commissions are just, you know, sort of pulling the fleece over your eyes. It's to make you believe that's what you're paying, when in fact it's sort of inconsequential, you know, to most brokerage businesses, custodian businesses. So I'm really glad to see that they went away. So now people are actually asking these questions and starting to better understand, you know, where the money's actually made. And you're totally right. You know, Schwab, as an example, it's, again, roughly 60% of revenue, and almost all of their profitability is coming from credit interest. The second most, you know, revenue that's made from most custodians is revenue share. You know, so essentially the money they get paid from product companies to sell their products. So they make more money on rev share from third parties than they do from actually selling their own proprietary products, you know, like their own branded ETFs or mutual funds and so forth. So it's really an interesting landscape. I'd say that while there are, you know, there are things that people talk a lot about, I'll tell just from experience, that, you know, payment for order flow doesn't pay a whole lot. You know, it's much less than commission revenue, for what it's worth. You know, so I think if people are thinking, oh, that's, you're going to get really bad fills, and that's because the, you know, custodians going to make a ton of money, not entirely true. There are best execution policies that all broker dealers have to honor, and if they don't, they get fined. And so I'm not saying that that's perfect, but, you know, there are at least some rules there. And in essence, you know, it's sort of that's probably one of the bigger responsibilities advisors will have down the road, is to make sure that they're working with a custodian that really gets their clients best execution. The only way to really do that then is the custodians and broker dealers have to be transparent about things like, where do they make their money, how much are they making, and also how good are they at getting best execution. Unless everybody's transparent about how they're running and operating their businesses, instead of having, again, a transparent commission that is really not that transparent, what we're going to have is just a lot of very confused, you know, people wondering where the best spot is for, you know, holding their accounts and placing their trades. So I can only really speak to us. I can't speak to what other companies will do, but our intention is just to be fully transparent. You know, we see no reason why not to publish something akin to a quarterly report, even though we're a private company, that just explains, you know, here's our execution and here's how we make our money. I don't think it should be a mystery to people what's happening with their accounts. And I think if you're doing it right, you should be proud enough to tell people about it.
I guess on that note, any thoughts about a percentage of assets custodial fee or some other type of custodial fee model? And I just want to be clear, and I've said this before, look, of course custodians should be paid fairly, right? You're providing an extremely valuable service. But the question would be, why not just charge a custodial fee and avoid making money on, again, what some may say are less than transparent methods like whatever, cash sweeps or payment for order flow or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be difficult in a lot of respects. I mean, to have that be done very honestly, I think that's the biggest challenge. And I don't mean to like laugh when saying it, but what I mean is, if a custodian completely got rid of, and they just said, look, the only way we're going to make money is by charging a percentage fee for access to our platform. Everything else will be wholesale, exactly at the prices that we get it for. No upcharges, no hidden anything. What you'd find is that they'd start charging you probably around 25 to 30 basis points because that's what they make today. In fact, in many cases, they make more than that, 45 basis points, you know, so almost a half a percent per year. And so if they needed to reach parity, they would just have to charge these really high fees. Now, imagine if you're an advisor and you're going to your client and saying, hey, you know, so my fee is this, but, you know, my custodian charges this. And, oh, by the way, we use these products and these, you know, all of a sudden you haven't really made anything more simple. You know, yes, you would be able to tell someone precisely the cost of doing business, but it would be a very high number. And again, unless everybody honored that, you'd end up having a more complicated world than we live in today. So I think it'd be really, really tough. I'm not opposed to it. I just think that it's perhaps not likely to get the outcome people would like. Instead, what I think will happen is you're going to totally see some RIA custodians start charging a percentage, but guess what? They're going to keep charging you the other stuff too. You know, and so you're
depending.
You know, you're going to have more expenses without any enhanced transparency. And again, unless everybody's doing it, it's just going to create more confusion in the marketplace, which is really bad, you know, for everybody.
All right. Another area I did want to ask you about, and this is something that I don't think it's talked about nearly enough. The fact that larger custodians are competing directly against the advisors on their platforms, right? Because they all offer financial advisory services and robo-advisors. How do you think that plays out longer term? Because it seems like the bigger these custodians get and the more scale they gain in other areas of their businesses, I would think this becomes more of a problem for financial advisors.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think so there's kind of three things I would cover on this. I'll try to cover them quick. So I'd say the first is that, you know, these custodians are running, you know, 100-year-plus businesses. And just sort of categorically, I'm just saying they have no intention of ever going away. They plan on being around forever. So they can play a very macro game. And really what they're doing is they're looking into the future and they're saying, well, what does financial advice look like in 20 years? Many financial advisors fail to do this. And what I mean by that is in 20 years, you know, your clients are going to be people who today are 10 years old, 15 years old, you know, 20 years old. Those people are going to have very, very different expectations in terms of how they handle their money, how they get help. And just a great example for anyone who has a teenager, I have two of them, they don't even like talking on the phone. Like they would rather just text you, you know, or message you via an app. Like they have no interest in sort of the personal relationships, at least at this stage so far. We've seen nothing from sort of that Gen Z that suggests that they want to go talk to a human financial advisor. So, you know, if you're a custodian, the first thing you're doing by, you know, looking at sort of all of these direct-to-consumer ways of doing business is you're preparing yourself for a future that is very different than the way financial advice is delivered today. So that's kind of item one. I think item two is that's also, if you look at, again, the public companies that offer advisory, you know, direct-to-consumer, robo or otherwise type services, That's one of their other biggest money makers. That's really great business, right? Because they're actually making all the brokerage revenue that they make from a regular custodial account. They get to control what percentage goes in cash, and typically it's an inflated number that's unnecessary and not beneficial to a consumer, but it really helps the broker-dealer or, you know, the brokerage element of a custodian. And then they get to use their own proprietary products a lot. So they get to make money everywhere. It's like the most lucrative business they could be in, even if they charge you nothing for it, right? So think about like Schwab's, you know, intelligent portfolios, where they can charge you nothing for access, and yet they make more money off that than any other line of business they do. So of course they're going to do that. And then the last part, you know, so my third point, which I think is really fascinating, is, you know, many big advisory firms got big on the back of referrals from their custodians. So there's this interesting world. So why don't people talk a lot about it? Well, most of the biggest customers of a custodian, at least on the RIA side, they got that way because their custodian referred them to business. But that's really starting to change a lot. In fact, it's already been changing a lot, meaning it's very hard for any new firms to get those referral agreements, almost impossible. So you have a small group of very large, you know, old RIA firms receiving the benefit of custodian referrals. Meanwhile, again, the landscape of financial advisors is changing. You know, it's today, I think the average age is late 50s or something to that effect. So again, what does that look like in 20 years? So advisors are sort of thinking micro, right? They're thinking very short time frames, less than 10 years, in many cases, less than 1 year out in advance. The custodians are playing this long game. I think if advisors don't wise up, they're going to find themselves really pinched, you know, because it doesn't take a lot of like rocket science type math to forecast that in 10 plus years, you know, let's say right around the 10-year mark, we'll probably see over $1 trillion in these robo-based, you know, sort of platforms, whether they're the ones run by custodians or product companies, a la Vanguard, Schwab, et cetera, or just the actual, you know, direct consumer platforms like, you know, Betterment or Wealthfront, et cetera. So while none of those things today probably scare advisors much, the truth is like they're going to be very, very big business units down the road and be well positioned to serve a next generation of clients. And so if I'm an RIA today, I'm not really psyched about that, which is, you know, again, I say all this, you know, obviously somewhat self-interest, you know, that we made a very clear decision to only work with RIA firms and their clients. I feel there's a tremendous amount of value having a personal financial advisor can provide, and I don't feel that everybody is going to be served well by just a computer. Certainly some will be, and many will be, actually, but there's always going to be a need for human financial advice, the unique things that we can do, and a lot of it's just the empathy that we can provide. And sort of the coaching to make sure people are making smart choices with their money. But there's really no one else who's really just zeroed in on serving that demographic. Instead, you've got a lot of these conflicts, not just in business model, but also, you know, sort of the competing with their customer element.
Jason, only about 2 minutes left. On that note, any concern about the disruptor being disrupted? So I think of someone like Robinhood, and look, they may still end up being highly successful, but they really pioneered commission-free trading and having a slick user interface. And of course, everyone has now copied them. And the people doing the copying, the Schwabs and Fidelity and everyone else, they have significantly more resources. Does that worry you at all, that you clear a road for everyone and then they end up trying to run over you? Or to the points that you were just talking about, do you feel like it's just too hard for them to turn because of these, you know, this long established history of how their business models are built?
Yes, I think that's actually a great example of why I'm not particularly concerned. If we think about Robinhood, what's really interesting is that when Schwab and Fidelity and so forth all went to commission free, it's not like Robinhood account holders closed their accounts and moved them to Schwab. What Robinhood did really successfully is they attracted an entirely new clientele, right? So I'd say of their, I think they report having 10 million or so brokerage accounts nowadays. And let's just say that 8 million of those are from people who never had a brokerage account before. You know, so they got an entirely new group of investors interested in investing. And for what it's worth, if you go talk to a teenager, I have, again, a couple of them. So it's funny, if I ask like my 19-year-old son, He probably doesn't know who Charles Schwab is, but he knows exactly who Robinhood is. And that was their whole point. You know, they didn't want to appeal necessarily to a Schwab customer. They wanted to appeal to somebody entirely different. I think we have that same advantage. I don't think any of those larger companies, while they're trying to copy, they don't have slick user interfaces. Their user experience is miserable. You know, their design in many cases is difficult to look at. You know, it's a different strokes for different folks, I guess, but they're definitely not appealing to the same audience. And I think we have that same general appeal. You know, there's a new generation of people giving financial advice that really care about clients. They're willing to charge fees differently, put client interests first. They expect a digitally native experience. They really, really care, and they want to align with a company that feels the same way and puts their money where their mouth is and a product that aligns with it. So we feel really, really good about our position in the marketplace, largely because we're not actually trying to compete with Schwab, you know, or Fidelity. They have their place in the market. We think we'll have ours, similar to how Robinhood coexisted very nicely, in fact, has succeeded really well since everyone else tried to copy them.
Well, Jason, congratulations on everything you're doing. I really think Altruis has an exciting future ahead. I've said for a long time that I think a good independent custodian is needed in the marketplace. Certainly wish you all the best. Thank you very much for joining me this week.
Hey, it's been my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me, and best of luck and continued success with the show.
Thank you. That was Jason Wank, founder and CEO of Altruis.